Coming to you from the Carter Subaru studio. Welcome. Welcome to our final hour of our broadcast week. Now, I'm not here today. I'm taking a four-day weekend, but you've been hearing some best-of segments, and also Dave Bowes has you covered with all the news of the day. So, as we get into this hour's big lead, let me send it back to my friend Dave Bowes, who has you covered with what's going on right now.
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is the big lead.
Last night, the young professionals of Washington Policy Center were able to hold their event that was a panel discussion basically based on or inspired by the Seattle is Dying documentary that was produced by Como Television and conducted by Eric Johnson, the reporter. When originally they have had this event now planned for 2 months, originally it was supposed to be at Peddler Brewing in Ballard. But with about 2 days to go before the event, the venue bowed out, citing outside pressure. They're saying customer pressure, but I consider it activist pressure. Because if you're a customer of any place and you find out that someone you disagree with is actually, you know, talking there, and you say, well, by George, if somebody I disagree with is talking there, I'm never gonna be here again. That strikes me as an activist kind of attitude where, you know, the effort was, oh, my gosh, it's Washington Policy Center. It's their young professionals. They're going to talk about homelessness. You know, not only does this organization have a free market leaning, but they're also going to talk about homelessness. And not every point of view is going to be in agreement with the far left of Seattle. So let's put pressure on this business. I find that to be an outrageous attitude for anybody. But it didn't stop the event from happening. On my day job, I work for the Policy Center as communications director. Right now, I've got time off, so I'm just Citizen Bowes. But, you know, when you find out a venue cancels, you just look for a new one, which is what we did. And the young professionals director there found a new venue, went to a Surf Incubator. They held the event last night. 120 people or so attended. Nicole Jennings was there as a reporter. How would you summarize the event, Jennings?
I would say that it was, you know, it was democracy at work. It was great civil discourse with people who represented a variety of different viewpoints and ideologies. And, you know, I thought we saw a lot of different ideas come together in a very respectful tone.
A lot of heckling, a lot of hate.
No, not at all. Yeah. Except when Pete Holmes' name was mentioned.
There's some slight heckling, or at least booing there.
Yeah, just a bit of booing.
Just some good-natured fun. And if you're going to call that something tragic, then you wouldn't be able to have a baseball game in town or a football game in town, surely.
Right.
All right, so Sarah Rankin was among the panelists there. She's an associate professor and director of the Homeless Rights Advocacy Project at Seattle U. Chad McKay, the CEO of Fire and Vine Hospitality. Chris Rufo, a film director. He's a research fellow at Discovery Institute now. He was a brief candidate for city council, but bowed out after threats to his family and said, look, it's just not worth it. Amber Mattai, who was featured in the Como Seattle is Dying video, also participated. So you basically have a bunch of people with a wide variety of experience. And then listen to these sound bites and ask yourself, is it rational for a great city's residents to be trying to shut down or culturally censor? I don't use censor in this. I mean, we could, because it's people trying to censor. But a lot of times people think of censor as government. And in the legal terms with freedom of speech, government can't shut down your speech. As a private business or as a private citizen, you can say, well, I want to shut somebody down, or I don't want somebody to be able to talk. You can do that all you want. Basically, that's another part of free speech. Can't compel speech. But anyway, the panel presents a variety of views. Here's the Seattle U professor.
The only way we're going to work through this is if we can figure out a way to stop making this as polarizing as possible.
You know, I generally don't buy the whole idea that we have to make it all, you know, less polarizing, because I don't think that having a, you know, I mean, she's not talking about the panel in general. She's talking about the issue of homelessness. But just if you take a look at what happened with this young professionals group And you look at the attitude of people in the area trying to shut it down because there were going to be views expressed that they disagreed with. Or if you look at the general attitude of many on the Eric Johnson report, Seattle is dying, and you have this attitude among some who find their own views on the homelessness issue to be so culturally pure. It's almost like a theologically pure point of view where either you believe that this is the approach that is the appropriate one for the homeless issue because I know all the ins and outs of it. I know all the nuances and you don't. And if you're trying to force treatment, say, or anything like that, you're a monster. You know, that's an extremely intolerant point of view. And that's what I think, for the most part, is creating what the professor refers to as the polarization. Because, you know, people are looking at their public spaces and their parks. They're seeing people get assaulted outside of the convention center. And you have a large contingency, or at least a loud contingency, that's saying, well, you have to put up with that because, you know, this is what we demand. And whereas others are saying, well, we have laws, we should be enforcing them. Now, here's Chris Rufo, the filmmaker.
I think what it did is it cut through some deeply problematic taboos that we have in Seattle. It opened up a real conversation for the first time in many years.
Now there he's talking about the Seattle is Dying video, where all of a sudden the whole city's talking about it. I agree with him 100% there, and I think that's an insightful comment because it's not like nobody was talking about the homeless issue the way the Seattle is Dying is talking about it. I mean, you know, as a talk show host, I've talked about it many times. I'm sure Dory's talked about it and others. But there is a power to the visual media where it wasn't just people with a point of view saying something. It was all of a sudden it was a report from, you know, a longtime respected news agency in town putting together something that didn't fit the usual format and story. And it was like, oh my gosh, they're saying the things that others have been observing for a long time. They're showing on TV what others are seeing every day, and they're not sugarcoating it. And all of a sudden it just forces through. It's like, okay, we can't ignore that anymore. And if you're going to see it on Como television, well, then we can talk about it anywhere now. And it doesn't have to be like, what was that? Nicole, what was that movie in the 90s with Brendan Fraser, you know, and Joe Pesci? The homeless guys at Harvard. And do you remember what I'm talking about? Not Encino Man. But
John?
You know what I'm talking about, right? It was
Joe Pesci and Brendan Fraser?
Yeah, it was kind of like the typical Hollywood film where every time there's a homeless person, they're the smartest.
Fraser?
Pesci was.
Oh.
Yeah,
honors.
With honors, yeah.
Of course.
Or look at Home Alone. You know, you've got the bird lady in the park that's got the poo all over her because she's got birds sitting on her everywhere, and yet she's the wisest person in the neighborhood. It makes no sense whatsoever. But that's generally, you know, that's the status quo of how you have to address everybody. It's not a drug problem, possibly. It's just a lifestyle choice where they're there and they're really, you know, sweet, misunderstood people. You know, I'm not saying that that's not out of the realm of possibility, but it's probably not the rule. It would be the exception to the rule. And then the business owner, Chad McKay, who just wanted the city council to lay off.
Not attacking business as the source of the problem. And I have no love for the city council. I'm like a pro-market capitalist. I own like 13 businesses. I want effective solutions. I'm tired of fighting about stuff.
So, you know, again, is that a right-wing point of view? It shouldn't matter. I mean, it shouldn't really matter if he has that or not. But he's coming from a free market point of view, one you don't hear as often. And you certainly don't. You know, it's not like controversy erupts from the business owners and they're trying to shut down savant-like activists. You know, it's basically you have an intelligent conversation with a wide variety of views that allows people to hear numerous approaches and experiences and then come to their own conclusions, right? So is that a bad thing for Seattle? Some seem to think so. I think it's a bad thing for our community when we're unable to actually have civil conversations. Next up on the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Big Local.
Everett has been plagued by a couple of different instances related to the topic that we were just discussing. First, the Everett Library staff for the first time, administered Narcan to save a woman who was overdosing in the bathroom. Now, again, this happens to be a Como News story, but the way they start it, for nearly 2 years, the vials of medication sat untouched on the shelves of the Everett Public Library. I point that out because I find a little bit of poetry in the news. It's always fun. But a customer at the library says, look, there's somebody who looks like they're overdosing here. The security guard's able to come in, and he remembers this material there. And the Narcan, he administers it despite not being trained, you know, and saves a woman's life. There's so many things about this story that I find intriguing. One is, for all the problems that we have in the homelessness, we still as a society value life so strongly that we go well out of our way. We have materials on hand to try to save people who are administering self-harm drugs. We have enormous expenses going into saving lives. We have people giving chance after chance after chance after chance. This is part of why I get so annoyed when people are trying to say, well, you know, you're just treating the homeless people like garbage or the addicted like garbage. You just, you know, if you're not following their protocol, then, you know, you're a monster of a human being. That's just nonsense. You know, we as a society are investing all kinds of things in order to try to bring people back into humanity. And I think that's a plus. The other thing is that the librarian said that this is one of the top topic of librarians nationwide, which is treating overdoses. What does that say about libraries now? And what does that say about our community? Nationwide, we're having the biggest topic isn't will another Harry Potter book ever come out, but it's or how do we get kids to read in a media age, but it's how do we treat overdoses within our libraries? You know, I mean, do we have to this is why when I've spoken with prominent people, I've said, look, this issue is just huge. I mean, it's just beyond huge. And I've had people say, is it really that big? And I think, where do you live? You don't work in Seattle and you don't go into Everett often, do you? You know, because you go into either of those places. Everett, I hadn't been to Everett in many years, and I happened to drive in, except for one part of Everett. But, you know, I hadn't really been to the main downtown Everett in many years. And about 5 or 6 years ago, I went downtown. I thought I'd driven into an episode of The Walking Dead being filmed. Because there are so many young people just lying around in a parking lot. And I thought, what the heck is going on? You know, and Everett's improved dramatically since then, but it's still got big problems. And it's still, you know, dusk hits, and all of a sudden you see people walking about. It's like a real-life episode of a zombie thriller, you know, where people are walking around, obviously disturbed. You know, you can't get gasoline without somebody hitting you up for money. You know, as the last time I was there, a guy in a frock or maybe it was an evening gown, I'm not sure, but he had a wide variety of clothing on and looked like he had certainly not, he'd been sleeping outside for a while. A young guy, again, an able-bodied guy, saying he just wants a few bucks for, you know, insert cause here. And, you know, I thought, well, I'm not going to contribute to an addiction. I'm not going to contribute to a continued, you know, the demoralization of a human being. But it took about, well, what, 30 seconds for somebody else to drive in, and then people pay. Why? Why do they pay? Because you're part of the problem. One of my favorite signs is in the Walmart parking lot in Tacoma where it says, please stop the cycle, stop giving and panhandling, give to charities that know how to help people instead. You know, kudos to them for doing it. So kudos to the Everett Library staff for saving this woman. It shows the value that we have in our society. And I think it's a testament that, you know, people haven't given up on people. They just don't want to put up with the nonsense that every community is putting up with right now. And then finally, in Everett businesses in Everett are bulking up security after a grocery store clerk was killed in Everett at Broadway Grocery. This story suggests that business owners are spending up to $10,000 to beef up. $10,000 to beef up their security. You know, that's a lot of money. And it shows that when we talk about how much we're spending on quote unquote homelessness, which is really not just homelessness, but a wide variety of issues, that we're actually spending a lot more than that. And we need to acknowledge that if we're going to do that. So Nicole just took over my audio. I actually had it ready to go. It just hadn't refreshed yet, but thank you. Thanks for taking that over. Here's the clip on the relevant security.
You will never, ever in this area, I think, push it out for good. If you're not on it every single day, it just tries to creep back in. It's like waves. It's like cockroaches. It's like ants. You know, you just have to be on it all the time. And we just cannot have guys with guns, guys with needles, guys selling their drugs and the hookers. We just don't want that here. We have families. We pay the rent. We pay the taxes. And as far as I know, that means I get to decide what happens on private property. And that's how we try to keep it.
That's Como Television speaking with Brenda Humbert. That's a great cut. She's, you know, look, if she was in Seattle, can you imagine the hysteria? I mean, do you think, Jennings, you cover Seattle, do you think if she said that in Seattle that her business would face a protest? What are the odds?
I think she'd be drawn and quartered,
Nicole,
to put it in medieval
odds?
Terms.
We've got drawn and quartered on one side.
What? What
toast.
Was the question?
She'd be toast.
Toast,
right?
Sure.
Toast in Seattle. Can you just admit to that? Thank you. Jeez. You know.
I'm working on the next segment. Right. Sorry.
Yeah. Just disagreeing. I know. It's your habit. So how much money are they putting in?
You know, funny, because when you're a barber, you end up with like a minimum wage. You really are a very low paid worker. And I have put at least 10 grand in this last year into
security. 10 grand into security. 10 grand from one business owner. And we're wondering about the real costs of, and I hate even the way that we talk about the issue is, you know, to deal with the homelessness crisis, but it's not homelessness. Again, if tomorrow you gave a house to each individual that you found without treating the underlying problem of their dysfunction, within a certain amount of time, the house would be a squatter's house. It would be a rat's nest. It would be infested with needles and toxins and drug labs and other things. It would be a complete disaster. So the problem isn't homelessness. The problem is something else. And we need to start identifying and talking about the root causes of what is actually challenging our community if we expect to fix it and if we expect to get it under control. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Dory Monson with a highlight interview of a newsmaker coming up.
Awesome audio is coming up, Dave.
I lied. Dory Monson, it's not coming up. Well, he is on Monday.
Yeah,
so,
no,
you know,
you're back on Monday.
Yeah, I know, but his highlight of news, okay. Newsmakers
is coming
up on Monday.
This is the best outro to a segment I've ever heard, Dave.
Nicole just, you know, she's got a one-upper. She's a one-upper, that's all. It's not hard.
Oh, geez.
So what's coming up?
So we're going to try awesome. To do awesome audio.
Slightly more awesome audio than the audio you're hearing right now. That's what's coming up. Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show here on 97.3 Cairo FM. It's time for some awesome audio brought to you by Brown Bear Car Wash.
This is Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the week.
Let's get it rolling.
Oh, okay. So we're going. I'm going to help you with this one. So I'm going to.
I hope so.
That for you.
Yeah. Usually, your
I
help
thought
is
you
suspicious.
Might tell people that, but maybe not.
Well, I didn't know they needed informed, but yes, ladies and gentlemen. My training wheels today come to you courtesy of Nicole Thompson, who at some point will actually deliver some awesome audio, I hope.
So Dory and I talked about this story earlier in the week, but there was a Camping World who had a large American flag flying above their business, and they are quite they're sticking to their guns about not taking the flag down.
Number 3.
I don't care if it goes to $500 a day. The flag is not coming down.
He says it's not hurting anyone.
From our perspective, if the flagpole isn't hurting anybody, and it isn't a danger to anybody, then the size of the flag is somewhat irrelevant.
That's WSOC in, I believe, oh gosh, I can't even remember what city it was in, but yeah, they're
in a city somewhere else.
I love that.
It reminded me, though, of outside of Tacoma Screw, you know, in Tacoma when you're headed toward Gig Harbor from I-5, you know, there's the giant American flag there.
Yes, people were texting us about that. When we were talking about this flag, we had many people say that's just like the Tacoma Screw one.
And it looks awesome.
It's great.
I'm inspired every time I see it. It's just a beautiful display. And so when I first heard about this city trying to shut down Camping
North Carolina is where they are, and it's Statesville.
North Carolina. They're trying to shut down the flag because they've got rules about how big something can be. I thought, this is the problem where we have to legislate everything, right? Because the real worry is, well, if they have this flag, then everybody's going to have a flag, and they're going to have all kinds of different ones, and they're going to – some of them – I mean, just imagine if they were flying the Make America Great Again flag or the Bernie Sanders Medicare for All flag or whatever. You know, I mean, you could end up with a problem, but it's not a problem yet, so why are you making it one?
So just chill.
Yeah, chill out. Fourth of July is coming up. Good time for it.
This audio is from yesterday. This is Trump during his presser yesterday with farmers. He decided to...
Wait, did we get a number two? Or did we get that after
it's coming. I explain first and then we hit the sounder. I know, it's quite messy. Yeah. I screw it up all the time.
Yeah. But, good producing.
But yeah, so he was trying to defend. Pelosi came out of their meeting and said that he was acting all obnoxious and whatever, and got all, you know, mad. And
he walked out. And he was throwing a fit. I worry about his mental health.
So yesterday, Trump decided to go around and ask everyone if that was indeed the case. That was he throwing a fit? Yes, when he was talking to Pelosi and Schumer.
Number two.
So I just want to let you know. Every time I go into a room, if there aren't cameras, they come out and say, oh, he was yelling, he was screaming. Kellyanne, what was my temperament yesterday?
Very calm, no temper tantrum. I told the Facts First crowd, if they published that they were fuming, temper tantrum, rage, lost it, that's just a lie.
Then he went to Mercedes.
Let me ask you this. Mercedes, you're always a straight talker. You were in that room yesterday?
Yes, sir.
What was my attitude when I walked in? Did I ever scream?
No, you were very calm and you were very direct.
Did they ask Kellyanne's husband?
I don't know that he'd have that answer.
No.
His director of the National Economic Council, Larry.
The great Larry Kudlow. Could you come here, please? You're not afraid of television. I know.
You've got to take care of Larry.
He's done more live television. Maybe Regis has you by a little bit, right? Not by much. Larry, you were at the meeting yesterday, right? What was my attitude yesterday at the meeting?
Mercy's right. Kellyanne's right. You were very calm.
Anyway, this went on for 8 minutes. I cut this down, but this went on and on for 8 minutes around to everyone in the room who was in the room the day before. And did he throw a fit? No, that's not the case. He was very calm. So anyway.
There's a part of me, though, that says, you know, you maybe one or two if you have to, but you don't really have to keep going because you start repeating the allegation against you. And all of a sudden, your opponents are setting your agenda now because you're denying their assertion over and over and over and over again. Although at this point, it does seem like somebody should – did nobody – there's no video, there's no recording of anything that somebody could just release and show?
He was
show,
looking into it. He told you – know? He asked Kelly that question. It doesn't seem like it. I feel like that would have got out by now. Anyway,
call
so
the Nixon
on.
Library. See if there's a secret recording somewhere.
He should have one. Room. He should always have somebody recording. Yeah. So number one, we have Gene Simmons, KISS legend, was speaking at the Pentagon this week. And we played a flag clip already, but this was actually Gene talking about how important the flag was to him. Number one, because of why his mother gets emotional every time she talks about it.
Number one.
I was born in Israel. I know I don't look Swiss. I'm a proud son of a concentration camp survivor of Nazi Germany. My mother was 14 when she was in the camps. I'm measuring my words because I'm about to break up again.
Again.
My mother just passed at 93. But if Americans could see and hear my mother, almost there, talk about America, they would understand.
He continued by remembering the first time that he saw the flag flying on television. It was still in the black and white days.
A black and white, because in those days we didn't have color TV. The flag was full screen, billowing. And I heard, you know, the national anthem, and I didn't know what it was or what was going on, and it was almost time to go to sleep. It was late. And every time my mother saw the flag, she'd start crying.
And he continued to get emotional.
From my mother's point of view, we were finally safe. I may have been born in the country, everybody. Give me 2 seconds. I may have been born in the country that people throughout history have referred to as the Promised Land, but take my word for it. America is the Promised Land for everybody. And don't be ashamed. Don't hesitate. We need to teach young people to be comfortable with saying, God bless America. End of my story.
Good for Gene Simmons.
Wow, that was awesome.
It is. Shows that no matter how old you are or how tough you are, mom still can bring a tear to your eye.
And the flag.
And the flag.
Okay, that was Awesome Audio of the Day brought
and that
to
was
you by
Awesome Audio.
Around there. Car wash.
Well, it's Friday, the end of the week, headed into a long weekend, and this is the last Dory Monson show for a few days, which means it's time for...
Today's sign that the end is near.
An employee at a Florida Wendy's took a bath in the sink. In an industrial-sized sink, and it has everybody in the community grossed out, thinking for the 93-second footage, because they've seen it, they're not going to be able to eat at that Wendy's ever again. And the most shocking part...
Would you agree it's kind of disgusting?
The most shocking part is that... Well, yeah, it's kind of disgusting, but at least it wasn't... You know, it wasn't bathing in on a hamburger. He's bathing in a big sudsy sink, and he has shorts on, but he is barefoot.
Here's some audio from it, actually.
Go, 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 go. Oh, s***. Take a bath. Get in there.
Oh, my God. There's water going everywhere.
You just gotta come. Wash your armpits. Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, that part was a little disturbing. But then you have that video, by the way, is captioned, "I don't suggest anyone eating at a Milton Wendy's again." You know, as though the entire Wendy's franchise has to be condemned here. And the big shock for people is that it's still passed health inspection. And people are saying, how could it possibly be? And I feel like, look, it's not like the restaurant had a policy that people had to bathe in the sink and then immediately grab your dishes. Presumably, they washed it up. And what are they supposed to do? Like, tear down the restaurant and start it over again in order to pass health inspection? Nicole was arguing with me about this earlier. Like, it was, oh my gosh, it's so disgusting. I would never eat there again. Try going with a police officer, one of those forensic lights, into a hotel room. Okay? It's an unpleasant experience.
Don't know.
Yeah.
Usually doesn't hurt you.
Well, that's what I mean. It's like, this is in a sink. The guy's got shorts on, there's soap and industrial cleaning supplies. At least I know it's been cleaned, you know? Otherwise, we're going to have to get rid of every used car, because Lord knows, who knows what's happened in the back of every car out there, right? Every hotel room must be burned to the ground before somebody starts over. I think people are just in a frenzy now, and we act like, oh my gosh, something disgusting happened here. We're never going to be able to eat here again. You know, no parent in the world would be able to eat in their own house again based on the diaper blowouts that occur. If this were truly the worst possible thing.
Okay, I'll give you that one.
Another sign that the apocalypse is near is a Massachusetts man came home. The back door to his home was open, and he arrives home with his little son. The boy was the first to notice that the door was open.
I could just smell cleaning chemicals. I could tell something was wrong. And I started looking around the house, and I found that my bathrooms had been cleaned.
The atrocity of it all. I mean, at first I thought cleaning supplies, what, somebody get killed in this house and they wiped it up? But no, he goes to the bathroom, the bathroom's been cleaned, and then he goes to each room of the house, and he finds out that every room's cleaned.
But it was a tense couple of days, you know, just worried, just because someone was in the house, you know. It's like, yeah, I'm glad. It's like I've been waiting to, like, open a cabinet and find that creepy artifact, you know.
Not me. I'd be like, hey, I'm going to leave the house again. I'd be announcing, I'm going to leave again. You know, I hope nobody breaks in this time because it's a real mess.
So what they have determined, but no one has actually come forward about it, but they've determined that it was somebody that cleaned the wrong house. They probably were supposed to clean a nearby house, and they figured it out eventually because...
It was really the roses that really got me thinking that some professional cleaner had accidentally stumbled into my house, and if I was going to judge the quality of a toilet paper rose, I would call this high quality.
And also, they stopped in the kitchen. Well, a lot of people have refrigerator magazines that show old pictures in the kitchen and stuff like that.
The one thing they didn't do was clean the kitchen, which was a little disappointing.
Yeah. They think that, yeah, that they figured it out that there was also snakes in the hallway to the kitchen, so they think they might have saw the snakes and realized, hey, there were no snakes in here before.
Snakes in the hallway.
Yeah. Yes.
Not on a plane, in a hallway. Mm-hmm. Yes, that is a sign of the apocalypse, not because of the break-in, but because of the choice of decor for the individual. By the way, famed comedian Adam Carolla did that once as a closet installer. He went into a home, installed a closet, and then later realized it was the wrong house and had to go back and try to get the closet, I think. Anyway, final sign that the end is near... Sylvester Stallone has a new picture, a tweet that went viral. It's a picture of Cuff and Link. Those are the two little turtles that were in the original Rocky. Those two little turtles in the tweet, he says, hey, happy birthday, these turtles are still alive, 44 years old. But the picture that's now gone viral is actually a year old because he did it on the set of Creed 2. So they're actually 45 years old, Cuff and Link.
Well, no, I'm guessing that he fixed the age, so they're 44.
Oh, 45. It's literally it's an old photo. That's what it says in the story that you gave me.
But
does it matter? The turtles are over 40 years old.
It's an old photo, right, but he still captioned it correctly.
The turtles are in their mid-40s. Stallone gave a rough estimate about how old they are, okay? And they're still alive. Good for these turtles. The more amazing thing than the turtles is the fact that the Rocky franchise is still alive and well and still making over $100 million a film over 43 years later.
Jeez. It is up for debate. Well,
well, thank
it's
God.
Kind of both ways, whether they're 44 or 45.
Don't let me get away with proclaiming anything. You know, that's really an important detail,
anyway.
That 1 year for the turtles.
Just really wanted to play this song.
I hope you have a triumphant weekend. David goes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM.
I will not have this in my studio.
You have failed conclusively. It's over.
And there is nothing that you can do here in this room that can turn that around. Nothing you can do that can make up for what you just did.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.